Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 47. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude!
Dude, number 47, we got another guy who's still in the playoffs, Viktor Kozlov.
We could use the big lumbering Russian right now.
We could. He's been looking pretty good in the Washington series. But you know what we got today? We got EJ Raddick again today.
We do.
Yeah, we were trying to get him during the playoffs. Unfortunately, the playoffs were so damn short, we couldn't get him on in time. So we got him after the playoffs are over, and he's helping us pick apart the Sharks team and figure out what in the heck is going on, what the heck the Sharks can do. And in a few minutes, you're going to hear that interview, and I think he said a lot of really interesting things.
Yeah, his five-minute scouting report of Thomas Pleahall is riveting.
It is. It's fantastic.
There is no... So many people just clicked off the computer right now.
I know.
There is no five-minute scouting report of Thomas Pleahall.
Right.
He's never mentioned once.
Not at all.
No, great interview, EJ. As always, very gracious, and we think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I think so. And let's see. Other business this week, Tom McClellan is going to remain as coach. That seems like a pretty good move. Not really anything else.
Nah, that was never in question, I don't think. Doug Wilson came out and was very clear that he does not hold his coaching staff responsible for what happened.
Right.
And I think that that's accurate. I mean, there might have been some choices that we've talked about, things that, you know, in hindsight, you go back and look at and say, well, you know, the matchup top line against top line, was that the right choice? And now after further reflection, I don't know if they had anybody else to go up against them because the third line was so bad.
Yeah, and the second line wasn't much better.
So, you know, really, you had one choice. You didn't have anything else to go with. You know, maybe the thing that we've talked a little bit off the air is the question of should Boucher have started a game in there somewhere?
Or should have Nabby gotten the hook?
Yeah. And, you know, it's easy to go back and look at those things now and say, well, that should have happened. But psychologically, we don't know what that would have done to Nabby as far as long term. Maybe that wouldn't have worked out so well. Obviously, now that we're out, I mean, it couldn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, look what it did for Washington.
That's right.
So I still don't think that would have made a difference in the series. I think the result would have been the same.
I think the other news of the week is that Marlowe came out with an injury. It was something we suspected before.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a sprained MCL. That's not the worst knee injury you can have, but certainly a guy that has explosive speed like Marlowe having a knee injury, that's pretty much going to kill the Jets there. And I think that's probably a pretty big reason why he didn't play as well as a lot of people had hoped in the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's hard to know. I've never had a knee injury. I've had an ankle injury, you know, and that, you know, when I went down with an ankle problem, it was debilitating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't even imagine having to play through something like that. We're seeing, you know, Mike Richards had a torn labrum, right?
Yeah.
In his shoulder. And Jeff Carter had a, now I just lost it. Jeff Carter had a major injury as well. For the Philadelphia Flyers. So these guys are out there. I mean, there's going to be so many more that we find out about later. I mean, and Brian Rafalski's is so bad that he's not even playing
mm-hmm.
in game two today.
That's right.
Against the Ducks. So, you know, that's not an excuse, but of course it does affect how you're going to play.
That's right.
There's no doubt about it. I thought some of Doug Wilson's comments were interesting this week, where he is clearly holding the team accountable, Mike, and not willing to let them forget about what happened.
Yeah, I think that's a good sign. I can't say I've heard too many GMs sound as depressed as Doug Wilson has sounded this past week, both on NHL Live and, you know, talking to the regular press. And you can find YouTube videos of him talking. I think John of Sharks Page has put up some stuff. You can go to sharkspage.com and check that out. John's done some real good work and publicizing a lot of that stuff, interviews and everything. So if you want to get some postseason comments and thoughts from players and coaches and the GM, Sharks Page is the place to go. But he sounded like just despondent. You know, he really took it hard. Took it a lot harder than I kind of expected. But
well, he's put so much time and effort into this team,
mm-hmm.
and I think he really believed, as I believed, and I think you believed, that this was as good a shot as we've ever had mm-hmm. at going all the way, that he had pushed all the right buttons, he had the right combination of players, the right amount of Stanley Cup experience on the roster, and they had their most disappointing flame out yet.
Right.
And, you know, he has some extremely tough decisions to make this offseason, which is something we touch on when we talk to EJ.
So let's get right to it. Let's talk to EJ Raddick, and here he is. Here we are again at Dudes on Hockey with our special guest, EJ Raddick, who writes for ESPN, ESPN.com, ESPN the magazine, and is a frequent special guest on the NHL Live radio show. EJ Raddick, thanks for coming back to Dudes on Hockey.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. I just wanted to let you know and give you a little ego boost. Our previous show with you on is our highest rated show ever. We're up to 13 listeners, so I just wanted to thank you very much for that.
Well, I'm very impressed.
Yeah, so were we, believe me. I mean, I can't believe my mom clicked the button that many times.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that was nice of her.
EJ, it's been a long week here for us. We've even considered being Golden State Warrior fans this week.
Boy, that would be, you know, that's a tough decision right there. I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far.
Yeah, we couldn't quite get there. We couldn't quite get there, but we do have a lot of questions about the Sharks. Clearly, it's been a very disappointing postseason for Sharks fans. And the one thing I just wanted to touch on the Ducks series first of all, and you know, there's the old maxim that if you run into a hot goaltender, you're going to lose the series. Is that really all that happened here with the Ducks, or is there something that contributed more than that to the Sharks losing?
No, I think it was more than that, because I look at, you know, when you run into a guy who's playing well in goal, I mean, the good teams, and sometimes they can't overcome it, but you have to try to find ways. You have to try to find ways to make it work. I think you have to get pucks to the net in a smart way. You have to get bodies to the net. I think, you know, you'll see, I think, with the Red Wings playing Anaheim, I think you already saw it in game one. Johan Franzen scored a goal, and they just came blasting in and smacked right into Jonas Hiller after the goal. And, you know, I think that you need to do different things to take a guy off his game. I mean, it's a professional sport. It's about results. And, you know, I think watching it, San Jose got a lot of shots on Hiller, but I don't think they made his life difficult enough. And, therefore, you know, I thought they allowed him in some ways to continue to stay in his groove, in his kind of zone, and play well. So I think it's more than that. Hiller did play well, but I think there are ways when you're facing a hot goaltender to kind of unnerve him, and I don't think, you know, San Jose did enough of that.
You mentioned in your interview with Doug Wilson this was a time to learn a lot about the guys on the San Jose Sharks. He didn't seem really to be in a place to elaborate on that yet, but we're wondering if you can share some of your observations regarding the players and the makeups of the San Jose Sharks, what you learned from that series.
Well, I'll tell you, I thought that, you know, when I looked at it, I think that, you know, the guys that, you know, some of the younger defensemen that they have had, they're behind, you know, now they've added Doug, you know, Dan Boyle, and they had Rob Blake, but the Christian Ehrhoff and the Mark Edward Vlasic, you know, Doug Murray's, I think you learned a little bit about those guys. I think some of it was positive, some of it was negative. But I think I get the sense from watching that group that they still need another player on defense, you know, in between where Boyle is and, you know, where those other guys are. I don't think, for example, as much as I thought Rob Blake turned out to be a very good addition, I just don't think he can be your second best defenseman at this point of his career. So to me, that tells me that either Vlasic and Ehrhoff, those guys have to be better, or you have to find another player to be in that role as the number two or number three defenseman in your group. So that was one thing I thought on the back end, that they still need some help back there. And then up front, obviously, you know, a lot of the focus is on Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, and Joe Thornton was very in and out as far as I could tell. I really like Joe. We've interviewed him on the NHL Live program a number of times, and he's a really good guy. So it's hard to, you know, it's hard. He's one of those guys you kind of pull for, you know, at least for me, because I think, like I said, I think he's a great guy to deal with. But, you know, he was in and out, and he's got to be, you know, I think he might have learned something, because by the end of the series, I mean, he really was trying to be kind of a different player and to be a little bit more, you know, through the fighting with Getzloff, and just seemed like he was trying to be a little bit more of an edgy player. But, you know, he's got to be there right from the get-go. And I don't think that, you know, I think he didn't ratchet it up until, you know, later in the series. Patrick Mahler was apparently hurt, and he looked like he had almost no impact at all in a lot of the games. And, you know, I thought this secondary guy, they didn't get a lot out of, you know, some of their role players. And I think they maybe need to get an upgrade in that area. Like Mike Greer, for example, is a guy I've always really liked as a player, and he's a smart player, but he just didn't seem like he had, you know, much impact at all. And you wonder, has he reached the point of his career where his skating ability just isn't good enough to be a factor anymore? So I think those are the areas that, you know, when I looked at it, that they need to hone in on if you're going to be, you know, if you're going to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, if the goal was just to be good and to be, you know, a really good team and be a team that makes the playoffs, I mean, that's one thing. But I get the sense that the goal, you know, listening to Doug Wilson and, you know, certainly the fans out there, the goal is a lot more than that. So I think those are the areas that, you know, I think they need to work on, is to improve that, you know, the secondary group of forwards, to add a defenseman that can be, you know, maybe in that second or third area. And I also have to start to look at the goaltending, because I didn't think Evgeny Nabokov was very good in this series, and I think that was another problem.
Yeah, they all seemed to kind of come to a head all at the same time, didn't they?
Yeah. I like to know what you guys think about Nabokov, because I watched this year a lot of the games, and I wasn't really blown away by him. I thought in a lot of games the team provided a little cushion for him. I thought this wasn't really his best season.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the one thing that actually surprised us both is the fact that Tom McClellan seemed to put Nabokov in the driver's seat in terms of how he was going to start and when he was going to start. And I thought Brian Boucher was a pretty decent backup. I was a little surprised that Nabokov was driving the bus on that score, and maybe he won't be driving the bus as much next year, right? Maybe they let him drive the bus thinking that he was going to take him to the promised land, and he took the bus off a cliff in a way.
Yeah, he's been better in the past, but I think this year, in a number of the games I saw him, I just thought, you know, he just didn't look like the same guy. And, you know, I think they have to assess where they are with that. Maybe they need to go back and bring in, you know, a guy behind him who they feel more comfortable with, you know, pushing him and playing him in more important games. So, you know, I guess that's another decision that Doug Wilson has to make. I think Nabokov has just one more year left on his contract. So, I mean, that's another thing that comes into play for the future.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, I wanted to go back to something you said a second ago about Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau. And obviously there's been a lot of criticism that they've taken, you know, fans here, media here, people calling for their heads and stuff. You know, for one, I'm not so sure this criticism is warranted, so I'm wondering if you think that the criticism overall is warranted. And I'm also wondering sort of about this playoff choker label, which at least Joe Thornton seems to be painted with again and again. I was wondering, do you think that's real? That there's some players that you can point to and say, these guys don't come up in the playoffs, and moreover, they'll never come up big in the playoffs?
Well, I think there are guys that, you know, they're not the natural leaders. And just because they're really talented players doesn't mean that they are the guys that lead. I think, you know, like in Joe Thornton's case in Boston, you know, he was the number one overall pick. He was their franchise player. They gave him the captaincy. And I think, you know, they expect someone that with that much natural talent to naturally be a guy who can lead. And I don't think, you know, I think it was Rick Wilson, who was an assistant coach in Dallas. He's still there. He's been there a long time now. You know, he once told me that, you know, it's grit and will is a skill. It's not something that, you know, everyone has. I think fans tend to think that, well, a guy should just be that type of, you know, leader. And, you know, when you look back at, you know, the NHL, there haven't been many guys that have kind of had that combination of just great ability and skill and the ability to be natural leaders. I mean, Mark Messier is obviously the one that comes to mind right away. And those kind of guys, you don't find them every day. So I just think that with a guy like Joe Thornton, you've got to try to surround him with guys who can, you know, who can provide that kind of, you know, who are guys who are leaders and, you know, have dug in and can win or have won. And I think that, you know, Doug Wilson tried to do that. this year, but bringing in some guys who've won Stanley Cups. The only problem was that, you know, with that idea was that some of those guys just really, you know, are past the point of being effective players. So I think that, you know, when you look at it, I mean, the idea of moving Joe Thornton to Patrick Marleau, I mean, that's all well and good as long as you have a plan to replace them and to have some guys there that, you know, you feel you can go forward with. So, you know, for example, you know, if you felt you could sign the Sedin kids if they become available and you wanted to have those guys be kind of the, you know, the top-line players on your team, well, then you could move those. You could move Thornton and Marleau and maybe try to restructure your team a little bit. But, you know, that's the thing to keep in mind. And I think what Doug Wilson has got to, you know, and I think that they're planning on doing is really, you know, have some kind of plan moving forward. Because I just don't think you want to rip it down. I think this is a team that still, with just some adjustments and maybe an addition here or there, can still be still a terrific team. And let's face it, they lost to an Anaheim team that's pretty darn good. I mean, that's what, when I looked at it at the end of the six games, based on where they're on right now, Anaheim's just better, in my opinion. I mean, when you have a defense that's led by Scott Niedermeyer and Chris Pronger, and you've got that group of forwards that they have, those young, talented kids with Getzlaf, Perry, and Ryan, I mean, this is a really good team. So, you know, I think, you know, you want to talk about moving Thornton, moving Marleau, are they guys who can win, you know, at the big moment? I think if you want to address that and do it, that's fine, but you better have a plan to replace them, because if you don't, you're going to be, you know, moving down the standings at a rapid pace, probably.
Yeah, it's a good point. Another criticism that's been levied is against the organization, and actually, we've read a couple places locally about the fan base, even the media sort of coddling this team and creating, or at least supporting, this quote-unquote culture of losing. You know, you talked a second ago about, you know, skill and grit and leadership being a skill. Is it possible that an organization can exhibit a culture of losing? Is that something that really happens? And do the Sharks have that?
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, this team has won a lot of games in the last couple of years. You say it's a culture of losing. I mean, the Islanders are a culture of losing. I mean, the Atlanta Thrashers are a culture of losing. I mean, the San Jose Sharks have done a lot of winning. They just haven't had, you know, the success they've wanted in the playoffs. And, you know, I do think that they could, like, you know, looking at this, and it's something that, you know, I've been thinking about with San Jose's situation. They're not covered by a ton of media out there. With a day-to-day thing. It's not like a Toronto Maple Leafs where there's a horde everywhere you turn. So it's kind of comfortable in that way. The team has done well, and it's a likable group. You know, maybe it's time to, you know, to make one significant move out of that core group and send the message that, you know, this is, you know, while, you know, it's nice for us to have a group that we really, you know, that we like each other and we're happy with one another. I mean, it has to be looked upon at the end of the day as kind of a mission that we're on and a business. And, you know, so maybe there is a need to stir the pot a little bit with some moves to some guys who have been there a while. And there are some guys in that room, as you know, guys who have been there, you know, several years now. So maybe it's time, you know, to make a move there and add someone who maybe isn't going to be part of the gang that has been there for a long time, but can provide, you know, a little bit of a different element to the group that can help them move forward.
Sort of touching on what you just said, in the Detroit Red Wings, when they went out in 2006 after winning the President's Trophy, they made that tough decision. They cut ties with Brendan Shanahan after 9 seasons, and they also cut ties with Manny Legacy after 6. So picking from the 3 main players that we're kind of pointing the finger at here, Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, and Evgeny Nabokov, is there one that you would identify that if the plan is in place to replace them, as you said, who do you think maybe is going to go?
Boy, it's a tough question. I think that, you know, I think that maybe the time to look at where they're going with Patrick Marleau is some, because he's been there since, you know, he was drafted by the team. And, you know, he's been there, and he's really kind of a guy. And it's unfortunate that he and Thornton are similar in some ways, is that they're not guys that are naturally leaders, in my opinion, as far as, you know, grab guys by the scruff of the neck. I mean, I think Marleau, it's kind of a little bit unfair to judge this year with him, because it's pretty obvious he was hurt. They said as much afterwards, and you could see it in his play because he had a really good regular season and just had a, you know, really fell off it when he got hurt and then when he came back. But, you know, maybe that's the guy just because he is the captain of the team and he's been there a long time. And while he's a terrific guy, you know, maybe it's time to have someone who's, you know, some guys there that are a little bit more, you know, guys who are gonna bang their, you know, beat their chest a little bit more and grab some guys and get them moving. So it's a very difficult call. Those guys, you know, Doug Wilson and his group are going to have to look at it. But, you know, again, I think if you're going to do anything like that, if you're going to move any of those type of players, you better have a plan to replace them, because it's one thing to say, okay, we're going to get rid of the guy, we're going to get rid of one of these players, and it's quite another to go forward without replacing them, because they're important players to the group, and they are, you know, very talented players and, you know, guys going forward that, you know, are going to be guys that are going to be good players in this league still, you know, for a while. So if you're going to move one of those guys, you better have a plan to replace them, because if you don't, it's not going to be the result you're looking for.
Jeremy Roenick's always a guy who speaks his mind, and on NHL Live this week, he said that he thought the Sharks had a tremendous amount of talent, but they lacked two guys who are going to go to the boards for you, instigators, pain in the butts, and he specifically named Ian LaPerriere, who coincidentally is an unrestricted free agent, as a guy who might have been able to help the Sharks. Do you think maybe he was peeking into the future here a little bit? Do we need two guys like that?
Well, I think, you know, that goes back to my point about the back-end guys on the group there. I just didn't think they got a lot out of those guys. You know, I think Anaheim, for example, got a lot out of Mike Brown in that series. I mean, he killed penalties, and he was kind of a pain in the neck on the ice. And, you know, I just think that he was a guy that gave them a real shot of energy, you know, from the back of their lineup. And I didn't think that the Sharks, you know, really got that from anybody at the end of their lineup. I mean, Torrey Mitchell came back, and, you know, he played okay, but he hadn't played, you know, all during the regular season. And I think it's just tough to come back in and, you know, and just jump right into the lineup after missing the whole season and be that kind of a factor. So I do think that, you know, Ian LaPerriere is a very interesting character. He's a little bit older, but, you know, he is a guy that, you know, understands when there's moments in the game that you have to, you know, stir the pot, or kind of you can have an impact on the direction of the game. So, you know, maybe, you know, he's a guy, but I do think they just need some more pieces to that puzzle. And, again, especially on defense, too. I thought it was too big a gap. And, you know, I know that Vlasic is still a young guy, even though he's been in the league a while now. You know, and Erhoff, and, you know, those guys have been there a while, but I still think that, you know, when I looked at it, you know, I kept saying to myself, boy, they need another, you know, another defenseman, you know, that could be in the mix there. They really didn't have anybody. You know, they tried Erhoff, I guess, and Murray playing against, you know, that Getzlaff, Perry, and Ryan line, and that's not a great matchup because now you have those guys on the ice a lot. You know, I just think that, you know, that wasn't a great matchup for San Jose, so I think they still need another defenseman that, you know, that fits in behind Boyle, but maybe ahead of those other guys.
All right, EJ, we're going to get you out of here on this. We got to ask you another Bruce Springsteen question. We asked you before which Bruce Springsteen song best represented the Sharks at the time, and you picked Reason to Believe. Unfortunately, that didn't turn out so well. So now we have three more song titles for you. I'll Work for Your Love, I'm Going Down, or Spare Parts.
I'll say Spare Parts for right now. That's what I still think they need, is some more Spare Parts. So I don't want to be as harsh as I'm Going Down. I don't think they've already gone down. So I'll say Spare Parts.
EJ Raddick, contributor to ESPN.
Spare Parts and Broken Hearts. I mean, that's unfortunately what's going on with San Jose, with the San Jose Sharks right now.
I think you're right. EJ, thank you so much for taking the time to come on Dudes on Hockey, and hopefully maybe we'll talk to you again next season.
All right, you got it, guys. Have a great summer.
Okay, you too. Bye. More good stuff out of EJ, dude.
Yeah, thanks, EJ, for coming out and sharing your insights with us. Dude, I think the most interesting comment that he had was that, you know, he does not identify Rob Blake as being strong enough in this point in his career to be the number two defenseman on a team that's going to have serious cup aspirations.
And also that the other guys on the team, Vlasic and Erhoff and Murray and Lukowicz, those guys aren't good enough to step into that number two role. That was something, frankly, I didn't really think about that much.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody was sort of focused on Dan Boyle, how great he was playing. We knew Christian Ehrhoff was getting 25 minutes a game, but maybe he shouldn't have been.
It's not that they're not good on the offensive end of the ice. I think it's defensively. They weren't able to stop anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't shut down the Ducks' top line. There wasn't that second guy who was putting in the maximum effort that we saw Dan Boyle scrambling, blocking shots, getting in the passing lane. He always seemed to be in the right place at the right time. And there wasn't, he didn't have a partner. While Lugo's numbers seem to be a little bit neutral, I think he was a plus one or a zero even.
Which is actually relatively good.
But he didn't play meaningful minutes in that series. He really didn't, dude.
Yeah.
I think, you know, EJ's observation is insightful and interesting to see if Doug Wilson is going to agree with that,
mm-hmm.
match up with it. And as we're sort of, you know, thinking about changes that need to be made ourselves, and I'm still not quite ready to say this is what needs to happen, in my opinion, that, you know, looking at the unrestricted free agent list, and we know this is not a way the Sharks are going to strike. They can't land unrestricted free agents.
Not any big ones anyway.
So, you know, people are saying, well, then that's fine. Let's go sign Jay Bobeister. That's not going to happen.
Right.
It's not going to happen. You know, you're looking at this list and these guys who we're talking about on this list who could fill that number two void, you know, Schneider, he's the same as Rob Blake at this point. Zuboff is broken.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Aucoin, not going to fill that void.
No.
Derek Morris, not going to be that guy. The only person I look at on the list here that is intriguing to me would be Matthias Olund.
Mm-hmm. But again, he's a pretty damn good defenseman,
sure.
on a team with a good defense.
Right. So
he's not going to come to San Jose either. I put him out of the Sharks' reach too.
Probably he's making $3.5 million. You got to figure there's a team, even in a declined market, that's going to make him a $5 million man next year.
I think so.
So the trade market's going to be where Doug Wilson's going to have to strike. Now, will he try and convince Ron Wilson and company to cough up one of their experienced blue liners? Could Caberle or Kubina end up on the Sharks after all? We've heard them linked together before. Maybe this is a marriage that could happen. But, dude, we'll see. That's something to keep an eye on for sure. Huh?
That's right. We'll be definitely talking about that in future shows, and we still have more plans for future Dudes on Hockey shows. We could talk about hockey every week. We've been talking about the Worcester Sharks on the blog, which is sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. We're going to keep you apprised of that situation because, one, it's good hockey. Two, it's Sharks hockey, which means that some of these players, and Doug Wilson said exactly that in the interview, he said, these players are auditioning for NHL roster spots. And so we're going to try to bring you insights on who these guys could be. Which of the Worcester Sharks could we see on the team next year?
Right. They've got, I believe they'll play 3 games before we're coming back next week with our next show. So by then, either they'll be eliminated or we'll still be talking. It's such an interesting matchup because, you know, they're playing the Providence Bruins,
mm-hmm.
and the Worcester Sharks are just right outside of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be kind of odd for a Worcester Shark fan who probably their NHL allegiance is with the Boston Bruins.
That's right.
So now they're in there rooting against the Boston Bruins prospects that they see there on the NHL level. It's just got to be strange. I would think an odd series, but I like Jamie McGinn has already answered the bell, scoring 2 goals down there.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Petrecki is signed to that contract. As I said on the blog, I think that Doug Wilson will mandate that he is on the ice in this series because he's got to check him out and see. Auditions are happening right now, dude.
That's right.
See what happens.
And there's more Dudes on Hockey to come. So make sure to tune in again next time. Next week, same time, same place.
See you, dude.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.